The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
That's great.
Yeah. That's awesome.
We could always warn our guests that we have background music, but it's always...
Yeah, exactly. We have sound effects. We have a live studio audience. That's what it is.
That's for real. Wow. I love it.
That's fancy. Fancy stuff.
All presented by the powers of Google.
Thank you, Google.
Thank you, Google. So... This is the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim Deal, Double G. I'm joined tonight by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And tonight we are at least not joined by at Roddy Cat and at PCN_Dirt, because Dirt is without power at the moment. Hopefully he might be joining us later on, and Roddy Cat is at work.
That's pretty good, dude.
Right.
We're pros at this now.
Yes.
But we do have two people taking their place tonight. We are lucky enough to have the writers on the Dark Horse new series that debuts next week, I believe.
Yeah, September 16th.
Donnie Cates and Elliot Rahal.
Rahal.
Welcome, gentlemen, welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, lots of fun, thank you.
Yeah, so we'll get into the Dark Horse series, the paybacks, some of the other work that they've done in the past, maybe some stuff in the future, questions, and all that good stuff.
Good.
I guess let's start off with, before we even talk about the paybacks, we need to backtrack a bit and talk about its predecessor, Buzzkill.
Now,
can you give people a quick rundown on, I guess, both series, what the Buzzkill was and what the paybacks is?
Yeah, Buzzkill is a book that I wrote with the drummer of the band The Toadies, Mark Rez. That was a book that came out, 2 years ago? Yeah, it'll actually be 2 years ago on Monday was the first issue.
Wow.
Which is also my birthday. And that book was about a guy who gets superpowers from doing drugs and drinking. And,
there's some wishful thinking actually right there.
Yeah, well, it's not actually as heavy as it sounds. Although he, when the book starts out, I haven't pitched this book in a million years, so give me a second. So when the book starts out, something has happened to him that he had to get so loaded, so drunk that he blacked out. And when he wakes up, he doesn't have any clue what happened or how he got there. So he decides to get clean. And then the rest of the book kind of follows him through the 12 steps. And in kind of the crux of the whole book is just because he wants to get clean and walk away doesn't mean that his bad guys are just gonna let him, you know, get away with that. And so the whole thing was kind of a mediation on a meditation rather on the roles of power and addiction and stuff like that. But again, not as heavy as it sounds. It was I like to think kind of funny. And as far as paybacks goes, Elliot, you wanna take that?
Yeah. Well, paybacks has been a work in progress for a while. Johnny and I had the idea for a while about, man, wouldn't it be cool if there was a repo group of heroes that repossessed other superheroes. And we've been turning the idea in our heads for a while of broke superheroes, indebted. And, Buzzkill was so good, and it did really well. And we were like, well, what if... You know, this idea works in the Buzzkill universe, and then the more we started thinking about it, the more and more it made sense, and creating sort of a legacy within that universe and expanding it out, and like just, you know, it all kind of just like worked really well, and we were like, let's do this, and Dark Horse was like, yeah, you guys should do that, and here we are. And it's that, you know, we've been writing this thing for, what, a year now, and yeah. It finally comes out next week, and it's been a lot of fun, and yeah, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, similar tones that it shares with Buzzkill, obviously Donnie, obviously Jeff Shaw, the artist, and the colorist, Lauren Affey, and there's humor injected into it as well. I think Donnie's Buzzkill, yes, it is very funny at points, but, you know, he had to tell so much story, really good story, might I add, within four issues, and the benefit of the paybacks is that we have a little bit more room to breathe here, so we have a little bit more ammo to be funny with. We can make a little bit more jokes, so it might come off a little bit more lighthearted, but it deals with some serious stuff. And,
yeah, we've always, as far as tone goes, we've always kind of explained it as if Buzzkill was Breaking Bad, then the paybacks is your Better Call Saul.
Okay.
Same kind of themes, but maybe a little bit more lighthearted. It's definitely more playful in a lot of it.
Yeah.
Did y'all get a chance to read the first issue? Did we send you guys?
Yes. I did read it.
Great.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we read it. My reading it is what wanted me to get you guys on the show.
That's great.
I was like, oh,
awesome.
This is good
stuff.
And just to piggyback off the, you know, the lighter tone of Buzzkill, I did read that when it came out. It's funny, when you start going through the pitch of it, it's like it started jogging my memory, because I read it, like I said, 2 years ago. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm starting to remember what it was about now. And yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it deals with using a drug to get your superpowers, but it's definitely not into heavy, serious tones. It moves around a lot, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And so yeah, we read, but the paybacks. I was gonna ask, how did, I guess, as far as your collaboration goes for it, how did both of you get together to start working on it?
That is a long story.
Yeah, a very short version of it goes like this. Elliot and I were both interns at Marvel, and this was in 2010, and we were both in the editorial department. Elliot was in the Spider-Man office, and I was in the Hulk / Ultimate Comics office. And, there's a new person here. Hi.
Yeah.
We just started, our friendship was kind of born in a very, like, foxhole type manner, in that we didn't know anybody, and that
we were both really just kind of
fellow
very
interns,
sad.
Stuck in your jobs for the summer or whenever.
And so just from there, we started, we got along really well. We became best friends. We still are best friends. And we quickly discovered that we have a very, very, very similar mentality when it comes to humor and storytelling. And we just gelled really, really well when it came to writing together. We complement each other very well. And we got together and we made a book called Hunter Quaid, which was the first book that we did together.
And that's I mean, you know, I think you're missing some fun parts I always like to tell, which I'm gonna retell. But we left Marvel in the winter, late winter. I left in the late winter. Donnie left a little bit after that, and then we do a page indie book.
Elliot.
To New York Comic Con next year, and we scared the living.
He's breaking up.
You're breaking up.
Who,
a
me?
Bit there.
Yeah. What he's.
Oh no.
We self-published a 22-page comic about this weird drunken time traveler, and we took it to a bunch of cons, and we pitched it, and it got picked up by Dark Horse, and it was in Dark Horse Presents. We wrote three of those, and then I did Buzzkill, and then I did Ghost Fleet, and now here we are with Paybacks. I didn't make a very, very, very shortened version of that. But the entire time that I was doing Buzzkill and Ghost week and everything, Elliot and I have been working on this idea. It's an idea that we had a million years ago, and really, you know, beginning to, you know, place it in a world that we already had access to, and getting Jeff Shaw to come on really, you know, made it a real thing, and that's why we're here. So yeah.
I guess that answers one of the questions I was going to ask about when you were thinking of pitching the paybacks to different publishers. But since you both had, I guess, previous experience putting books out through Dark Horse, I guess it made it just a no-brainer to keep it going over there.
Yeah, I mean, after Buzzkill was wrapped, you know, I think the idea was that I was going to do a direct sequel to Buzzkill.
I mean, they're great people.
And I think that was the idea. But if you've ever read Buzzkill, you would know that that was kind of a hard thing to do after the ending of that. So instead of doing a direct sequel, we came back with this idea set in the same world, kind of exploring same, tonally kind of the same, meaning it's a superhero world, but we are dealing with real world stuff. And you know, Jeff Shaw came back, Lauren Affey came back, and yeah, it just kind of worked.
Mm-hmm. Am I back in? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're good now.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, sometimes, I think it's even happened to me before, the sort of buffering where it sounds like you're talking in slow motion, and then you'll do that for like a minute now, so then it goes back working again.
Right.
So I sound fine, though.
Yes.
Okay.
You now. Yeah, you sound good now.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, you know what? I don't know if we want to jump right into the book, but I wanted to mention that I got a real kick out of a lot of the sly pop culture references, not even comic references, but pop culture references that are sprinkled throughout, you know, yeah. From everything, you know, everything from, you know, there's a certain van that kind of resembles a certain van that we're all really familiar with, that's black with a red, red detail on it. And, you know, just seeing that and the way it was drawn and another reference to this particular intellectual property, I got a real kick out of it. So
yeah. Well, the
van... Go ahead.
What were you about to say, Donnie?
Well, it's not a van.
No, I was just going to say... It's not a van. Well, what I was going to say is I think it's okay to just say A-Team.
Okay.
I don't think you need to dance around it. Yeah, I think you could probably just say that.
It's a reference.
I think you could say A-Team. Yeah. What's funny about that, though, is that I love vans. I think, like, they're the coolest car in the world. I don't know why.
Well, not a minivan. Like, you're talking about, like, old conversion vans, right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Old conversion vans. Yeah,
I know. I've had a couple friends live in conversion vans for like 3 or 4 years. Mm. Granted, they're weird garbage people, but I'm like, that looks like a good idea. I don't know. What? Like, we were in Texas. We did like a little retreat in Texas to kind of plot out the first year of the book, and we were like, what's like a cool car? And I'm like, do you know what's a cool car? Vans are super cool.
Well, to go back a little bit further, actually, in the original idea for the story, it was actually going to be a big rig, and we kind of quickly decided that maybe after like coming off of Ghost Fleet, maybe it wasn't the best idea to have like two magical big rigs back to back. And we were like, well, what else is cool? Like they need to be able to store stuff in it, and like, what's a cool thing? And Elliot was like, you know, it's the coolest conversion vans.
No.
And he was super right. So that's how that happened.
Yeah. In real life, as we walked into the Friends sitcom, I don't know. Growing up, one of my best friends in high school, Donnie's met him several times, Mike James, and Mike had a van that we called the van, and we would ride everywhere in it, and it was amazing. It had bucket seats, like the shag carpeting, and it had a television in it, and it had the movie, a copy of the movie Hardball with Keanu Reeves stuck. Keanu Reeves' Hardball. His Bad News Bears was stuck in the VCR of that thing. So, like, we could watch TV, but we could only watch Hardball. And, like, I don't know. Like, I think of that so fondly, of just eating White Castle in his van and watching Hardball, like a couple of dumb idiots. Just, it was a lot of fun.
Sure. And now everything you do for G-Baby.
G-Baby. Yeah, for sure.
It's a Hardball reference.
I mean, that's a deep I was going to say, dear God, like, I didn't realize you were such a Keanu Reeves fan. Like, I have put that entire film out of my memory because it's so good.
Whoa.
Pretty on point with that.
If Elliot actually owned the van since you were such a fan of it, but it all started well, from your friend.
Someday. Well,
that's a good question, Tim. I, being a comic book writer, am not a car owner currently because I have made countless decisions. So I'm currently saving to get a bicycle that will one day turn into a van.
I can't even bring myself to hit the laugh track on that one. I can't.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's just my life that we're talking about.
Oh, mercy. Oh, mercy. This is the real world. This is our version of the real world of comic book freelancers and artists and writers. Goodness yeah. gracious.
I guess should we also add comedians since you aren't you a comedian?
Yeah, I do stand up as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So I mean, I decided to follow two art forms in my life that both yield the least amount of money. So it's great. I'm a very passionate person. Killing it. Ah, God, you do that again, I'm going to hang myself.
No. We applaud your creative.
There you go.
You're living the dream.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Derek, I eat a lot of chili. I'm here. Can you
hear it? No, I was about to say, our other co-host.
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Dirt!
What?
Came through.
Dirt!
My internet is kind of going in and out a little bit, though. We had a big storm roll through here with some golf ball-sized hail a little while ago. But at the moment, things appear to be working.
You look like an animated GIF.
Like I said, my internet's going in and out. There's nothing. The whole block behind me is the whole block behind me is dark. I mean, there's one streetlight working, and everything else is dark on the street behind me. So at least I have light, you know, and I get a trickle of internet better than nothing.
Dirt, where are you from in Illinois?
I'm in Springfield.
Really?
In the middle of the state.
You're the only person I've ever met from Springfield in my entire life. I grew up in Illinois my entire life. That's cool. Springfield.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln lived in Springfield.
Yes, sure did.
We're really getting down to the stuff the fans want to hear about.
They like find out the some of the more personal items from their favorite creators, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were talking about you before you got on Dirt about where people lived and whatnot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just to give some feedback.
I got nothing exotic, you know. I don't bring anything special to the show.
Yes, you do, Dirt. You know what Dirt's neglecting to tell you is that he is he works for a comic book retailer, and he brings a retailer's perspective to the
show. That's a big deal.
Oh, yes.
So it's a very big deal.
I don't know if you want to shout the store out on the show or not, Dirt.
The store is called Killins. You can find us online, killinenterprises.com. We also run the popculturenetwork.com. And in fact, we had a whole box from Diamond with all of our Star Wars and Darth Vader this week were in that got completely crushed on a corner. And so every copy had something.
Oh, no.
So we're getting an emergency replacement shipment tomorrow of all those books.
Do you have to send them back, Dirk?
It depends. Actually, they said it's up to UPS on this one because they're actually going to send the UPS out to investigate the damage because they're going to file a claim with UPS because of the amount of product that was involved. So
gotcha.
It's going to depend, but I did manage to sneak a few of the digital codes out of the Marvel books.
Okay.
But don't tell them.
Oh, he's a thief.
That's funny, Dirt. Did you have a chance to read their book, Kayvon?
Yeah, I read it. Dark Horse sent us like the whole week's worth of books, like last week or the week before. I read it with the Dark Horse Hall.
Oh, there's not a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Let me get a listener question.
Give it up for Agent 70 on the ones and twos, everyone.
Yes, I'm on a roll tonight. This is, you know, that's what I get for sipping coffee and energy drink at the same time.
Oh wow, that's
the show is definitely not as entertaining when he's not here to answer ones and twos. Let me tell you.
All right. So, you know what? I was referring earlier back to Paybacks. You know, there's a lot of pop culture references in here, but there's also multiple references to, various eras of comic book history. Specifically, at least the first page kind of hits you with some real 90s stuff. And, you know, one of the characters in here, well, two of the characters really, really shouted out 90s image to me, specifically Blood Pouch and Skisquatch.
Oh, really?
And when I saw them...
Skisquatch!
Skisquatch! And when I saw them, I couldn't stop laughing. You know, the people on the subway probably
thought. That's great.
You know, I couldn't stop laughing. People on the subway looking at me, you know, I've got, like, headphones on, reading this, and they're just like, what is this guy laughing at? What's so funny? And I just couldn't help
awesome.
You know, but laugh out loud at Blood Pouch and Skisquatch.
The funniest thing about Skisquatch is that he's clearly a Yeti who snowboards. His name yeah. is Skisquatch. Does it make any sense?
That's I love it.
Go ahead,
buddy. It's all right. you can walk over each other.
I want to be really clear about something because. Well, Liefeld blocked me on Twitter, and that really bothers me. Because I think that he took Blood Pouch the wrong way. Because it is an homage and not a criticism whatsoever.
A loving tribute.
So everyone, if you're hearing this, please tweet at Liefeld with the hashtag #UnblockDonnie.
Forgive Donnie.
Because it is my goal in life to get a cover of the Paybacks drawn by him by Rob Blood Pouch.
I would love a chromium cover of Rob Liefeld chromium cover. Oh god, that would be so good. It's funny that you bring up. Sorry, Donnie. It's funny that you bring up Blood Pouch because that's part of the Blood Pouch is an integral part of the reason why Donnie and I are friends. Because when we were interns together, he was like doodling, and we were sharing an office in internality, and he's like, one day I'm going to do this character, and he held it up, and he's like, this is Blood Pouch, everyone, and it was like, all right, it was Liefeld, it was muscles and pouches everywhere, everyone was like, that's stupid, and I laughed, it was very funny, and behold, Blood Pouch, and then I came up with a Reflectoid, Master of Mirrors, Prince of Reflection, and both of those characters are in the first issue of the Paybacks, which I think is perseverance at its finest.
Sure. Absolutely. So basically what he's saying is, you know, we were bonded over being made fun of, and we persevere mostly out of spite.
Yes.
Just to kind of prove to everyone else that we're better than them.
Maybe you could offer an olive branch to Liefeld and see if he'll do a nightmare one shot about the talking unicorn.
Oh my god,
Dude! It's his. I will pay for it myself, Liefeld. It's all you.
It would be amazing. I would love to do a nightmare one shot. That would be great. One shot. Could you imagine?
There's a big story there.
Story.
We should get Lisa Frank to draw it.
Oh my god, that'd be great. And then thousands of school aged girls will like bring like pink nightmare notebooks.
I totally forgot I was a unicorn. I had to look back at the book. That's funny.
Yeah.
So, unicorn. The best unicorn on the market.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the character Night Night. Just one, the name Night Night.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of spellings of things that don't make any sense when are spoken aloud. Dr. Black, you know.
Because when you write it out, Night Night makes sense, but just saying it like I'm saying it now.
Oh, it's no bedtime.
Yeah.
It's bedtime.
And I like that the first page we see him where he's, you know, resting on the chimney, writing it in his little sketch pad, and he's like, oh, I like that line.
Yeah, he's really into him.
Yeah, he's the number one Night Night fan in the world. Night-Night.
And what's cool, like I enjoy comics that give us, not even sure to call it recap pages, but the intro page where you get to see all the characters, especially in teen books where you have so many characters to keep track of. And if it's a new book, it makes it a little harder to try to remember everyone as you're going through. So having that first page really helped. And I know when I at least initially looked at it, it was like, okay, just sort of not even thinking about it, I look and say, okay, Emery Reigns is the team leader, so I'm sure she'll be featured a lot throughout the book and maybe some other characters. But then as the story goes on, it actually deals a lot with Driver and Night-Night, and of course Dr. Black, of course. But
that recap page is going to change every issue as new people come on board, and maybe when some people don't make it out. What's funny is that recap page, I've probably written more recap pages in my life than I've actually written issues, because when you're an intern at Marvel, that's all you do is you write recaps.
So that's who's responsible for that.
And so Elliot and I both have written about a billion recaps. And so
Shadowland recaps.
Yeah, and I designed the one for Avengers Academy. That was a fun one. And we, you know, is kind of a big deal to us because we've written so many of them, and so many of them can be kind of boring. And it's something to easily skip over. But with a book like this that has so many moving pieces and so many characters, we thought it would be really important to draw people's eyes to that recap page before they go in. So every single time that you read a page or that recap, it's going to be changing. There's going to be like hidden jokes in there and like hidden foreshadowing stuff in there. It's a really it's an important part of the storytelling, as is the back of the book, which I don't think everyone has seen yet.
We've really talked about it.
No, we haven't. The back of it. Well, Elliot, you tell them about that.
Well, are we talking about the letters column and all that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, our letters column will be written, answered in the form of Dr. Black. He will be taking all of your questions about, you know, the paybacks, Buzzkill, or even just day-to-day things from, you know, your garbage love life to whatever, and he will answer pretty much everything and anything, you know, he's going to put in some things there that might give us a little bit more story, because it is Dr. Black. And then also, just a fun little extra, we're going to have a webcam.
What? Is Elliot just breaking up for me, or is he breaking up for all you guys too?
He was a little bit, but he came back.
Okay. And I didn't hear any of that.
Oh, okay.
Elliot?
I said all of it. anyway.
No, said all of it.
To repeat it, Dr. Black will be doing our letters column,
which is called Blackmail.
Blackmail.
Okay.
And he'll be answering all of your questions from, you know, why when I go to the bathroom to what's the
got. Okay. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Elliot. Cannot hear a word you're saying. Anyway, there's also going to be a webcomic, not really a webcomic because it's not on the web, but a comic strip that Elliot and I write, and this great artist named Matt Horak draws, and it's called Space Stepdad, and it's about a stepdad who lives in space with his space kids and his space wife, and he's just trying to get by. It actually has very little to do with space.
Is this set in the same Buzzkill Payback universe?
You know what? It could be.
There's no reason it can't be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, sure.
And if people wanted to submit questions for Dr. Black, is there a email address that they can send that to?
There is an email address and a Twitter handle.
Oh.
Yeah, the Twitter handle is @blackmail. Black, of course, spelled BLACKMAIL. You ask them on there, and then we will print the answers in the book. Maybe occasionally Dr. Black will get on Twitter himself, and he'll answer some stuff, too.
I like it.
I got two things to follow up with here. Matt Horak is the artist on a Rob Liefeld book called The Covenant.
I know.
There's your way in with Rob Liefeld.
Man, you'd think, right? You'd think. But he's not into it, man. It bums me out. I'm a legitimate fan of Rob's work. Like, I'm not even like an ironic fan. I really do love it, and he just hates me. But what are you gonna do? I love you, Rob.
Roddy Cat, one of the usual hosts on the show who couldn't be here tonight, asked us on Twitter to ask you who does the solicits, and what about the preview text that's often on the back of the book? Stuff. Do Marvel interns do all the solicits?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. I wrote a bunch of those. What's really funny, and there's
for Marvel.
There were Yeah, in Marvel books. Yeah, there. I can say this. There were absolutely a few times when I was writing those, and I would go to the editor, and I'm not going to name any names, I'm not going to name any books, but there were times where I would go to the editor and say, okay, so I have to write this description of that issue. What happens? And they had no idea. And they're like, just make something up. So occasionally, that's why I think you get so many descriptions that say, like, Wolverine faces his biggest challenge yet. Will he live? With, like, no specifics whatsoever. Not all the time, some of the time.
Yeah, we like to make jokes of some of the solicits and, like, covers for books. There's one famous Marvel book where there was a character featured on the front cover, and then as we read through the issue, that person actually never appeared in the book.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
No.
Elliot's trying to rejoin, hopefully.
You'll have a better connection. A little,
yeah. Since we're getting to questions, we've got one from Twitter from Geoff Mart, who asked, will Paybacks be a limited 12-issue/year or arc break arc like some other books?
It'll be 12 issues a year. Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing, so it's not going to be broken up into, like, mini-series like some are. I think Geoff right now is back with a vengeance, buddy.
I've turned off my camera. Maybe that'll help.
Okay.
Geoff is drawing issue 7 right now. Elliot and I are wrapping up issues 11 and 12.
Wow.
Right now. So we will never ship late. We work crazy in advance. Because I'm actually a former retailer myself. I used to run a bunch of comic book stores here in Austin. And so I take it really seriously. The entire team takes it really seriously to make sure that when you're spending your money on a comic that you're A, getting your money's worth, and B, that you're getting it on time. So we're pretty serious about that kind of stuff.
I know Dirt appreciates that.
Yeah, especially even some of the big things like Convergence from DC, even though it was, you know, a company-wide event, it still knocked books out for 2 months while they were doing their funny thing, and then when a lot of the books came back, people were just like, nah, I'm kind of over it. It's been a couple months, I haven't read it. They wanted to move on to something else.
Yeah, you know, and that, I mean, that's something that is kind of top-down for us. We want, you know, when I write a script or when Elliot and I write something together or, you know, pretty much every step, we always kind of sit back and say, is this worth $4? Is there enough entertainment in here? Is there enough story? And so, yeah, I mean, we really think about the retailers and the fans a lot. And that's something that I'm really thankful for, that I have that retail experience to come in and say, like, you know, don't dick around in your book. Like, you're there for entertainment, you know? So I don't have a better way of saying that.
Did you guys have a lot of input in the design of the cover?
Of the first issue?
Of issue number one. Yeah, Paybacks.
Yeah, I mean, we've been collaborating with Geoff the entire time. I mean, we give him a lot of ideas, and each cover, you know, we want to reflect something for an issue or something like that. But at the same time, you know, there are no amount of words that we can give Geoff that are as good as what he can do, because he's just a monster at art. He's just so good at it, and he is
Elliot.
I'm being. Yeah, we're all trying to be polite and like waiting.
Hello, Elliot. Okay, so we give Geoff like kind of broad strokes about like ideas that we might have, and then he always comes back with an idea that is way better and way bigger than anything we could have ever explored.
Right.
Geoff is a super integral piece of this whole thing. What he brings to it, and like some of the ideas that he brings, and the design of all these characters. I should say that like almost every single character that you see in the book is all Geoff. Like, we just provided names. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like a power set, and the distinct look of every character is all Geoff. I mean,
except for Blood Pouch.
Except for Blood Pouch.
I was just going to say that what I love about the cover, and props to Geoff Shaw, is that it gives you the gist of what this book is about in one image. And that's, you know, that's a phenomenal thing. You know, everyone is familiar with what actually, and I'm going to hold up an image of the cover. you know, what's phenomenal about this is that everyone's familiar with this. You know, the run-of-the-mill person walking past this, you know, in the comic book shop is going to see this and understand immediately what this book is about. And that's great, you know. And,
oh, thank you.
And it's so eye-catching that, you know, we're all familiar. I hate to say this. We're all familiar with this image. We've seen it. We may have, unfortunately, lived through it. But,
yeah.
So, once you see this and get that, I think this is, you know, it's a phenomenal image to get someone to pick this up and once you get past this is like an icebreaker joke. And once
you get that,
I think this is a great cover to get people to pick it up and flip through this. So, you know, props to you guys and to Jeff Shaw for coming up with this great concept.
Thank you. What I think my favorite thing about that cover is that the cover quote has nothing to do with the image that you're seeing. because that quote from my buddy Gerard Way is a great quote, but there is no unicorn or anything on that cover. It's so bizarre that it actually helps the entire thing. That his quote ended up becoming like a great description for the book, which is, here's what this book is about. There's superheroes and a tow truck, and so you're kind of understanding that. And then there's this bizarre quote that doesn't make any sense, which to me gives you the whole picture of the book. That you think you're getting one thing, but sometimes there's unicorns.
Yeah.
You know?
And it may or may not talk.
May or may not talk.
What I want to know is, the Soviet nunchuck, if he's the only man to have ever fought in the Cold War, who did he fight against?
Man, that is a question I am not prepared for.
Yeah.
Missiles. He fought missiles. Yeah.
Let's see, let's get some other questions.
I don't know.
Xavier.
You fought Rocky after Drago, right? After Rocky beat Drago,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Rocky.
Oh, no. Beat up on a guy with brain damage. Oh, no.
So we've got two questions from Xavier Bermeo. First, he asks, how would an artist contact you for advice or short story work?
Email.
Yeah, I mean, my email is in my Twitter bio. I think Elliot's is as well.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, we're super accessible. If anybody ever wants or needs anything or needs advice or wants to show us their portfolio, that'd be the way to do it. Daniel Warren Johnson did that, and that's how we ended up doing that book we did. Ghost Fleet.
That thing.
Yeah. That thing.
All right. And then he says, have you gone to chat with Grant via working at Heavy Metal?
I've only talked to Grant that we did at San Diego, but he's, and he owes me lunch in the future, and well, that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, we did a panel at San Diego with Grant, and he was really great, actually. It was the most surreal thing in my entire life, because I was up there, and I was talking about this weird vampire book I'm doing with Heavy Metal. And he was super into it. And after the panel was over, we were like kind of standing off to the side, and he beelines over to me and Elliot with his handout, and he just comes up and he goes, "You are fucking great, man. You are fucking great. That was fucking great. You're fucking
heavy
great,
metal."
Man. It was great, man. It was
it was cool.
But beyond that, I think Grant's more gonna be in charge of the magazine, and what we're doing is our like creator owned comics that exist outside of the magazine. That being said, I am gonna be doing a couple of stories in the magazine itself, and I think I'm gonna have to. I think Grant has to like approve everything that I write for that, and so that's really stressful. But no, I haven't talked to him besides San Diego. But he's a super nice guy.
I guess that, at least for Elliot, I believe some news came out this week of a book you'll be working on at another publisher, correct?
Well, I mean, a lot of the news is also new Heavy Metal book writer from The Late Show, Stephen Colbert, named Daniel Kibblesmith. And actually, Daniel and Donnie and I will be appearing in Valiant, Valiant number 25.
Did you guys hear that?
No.
Nay.
Did y'all didn't hear what he was saying?
Yes.
It's all right.
Did you guys hear what he's...
Unity 25.
I'll say it again.
Unity 25 is a big jam. It's like a big comedy jam with a bunch of short stories by a bunch of different people. And Elliot and I are going to be writing a story in that. So that's
yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
We're writing a story in that. And then can you hear me now?
Yes.
Is this better? Yes?
No. Yes and no, but you can go ahead.
I'm doing with Daniel Kibblesmith, a writer from the list, as well. He's also in that Valiant issue too. But I don't know what's going on.
It's all right.
I don't know why my camera off. Sorry, I don't know why my computer's doing this right now.
It happens. Trust me, it happens.
It does happen. Doesn't matter if you're Wi-Fi or hardwire either. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have found issues with being on Wi-Fi on the Hangouts at times, but that's just because I got a new office, which was far away from my router, so that was a little issue. And I think that was it we had for listener
questions. Well, RidyCat on Twitter was asking, are either of you guys going to be at New York Comic Con or any other upcoming conventions?
Good question.
Yeah, I will be at I'll be at Rose City next weekend. I'm actually going to be hosting a panel on Sunday at 2:30, and the name of that panel is It's called how to promote yourself on Twitter without being an annoying jerk.
Oh no,
is the name of that. Yeah, which a lot of people would say that I'm a bit of a hypocrite for hosting that panel because I can be an annoying jerk. So it's as much for me to learn as it is anyone else. And then Elliot, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
You want to tell them about the tour?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, I mean, on our way to New York Comic Con, we'll be doing shows at like 7 comic book stores from Chicago to New York. Yeah, we'll be doing signings and shows. I'll be doing comedy at night, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. Games and giveaways and stuff like that. Just something I've always wanted to do, that'll be on our way to New York. And then after that, I will be at Chicago Con, C2E2, and then I'm going to do the same thing again on my way to WonderCon to L.A., and then I'll probably go to Denver and San Diego, and that'll be it for the year for me. Maybe I might go to Dragon Con, but who knows? But that's next year, I guess. But yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. We're going to 7 stores and local comics. I'm gonna headline. Donnie's gonna host. It'll be fun. It's something I've always wanted to try out and see if we can, you know, take doing comics to the next level kind of thing.
Cool. I'll see you guys at New York Comic Con then.
Yeah. I'm really excited. Stop by our booth. I'll also walk around the floor a few times.
Absolutely.
So you both will be sharing the booth.
Yeah, well, we're both splitting the booth, so it'll be nice.
Sorry, I had to pee.
I think they can hear me again, or at least
good.
Yeah,
good. So did you just tell them about the tour?
Yes. Yeah, tell them about the tour. Evening with the Paybacks is what it's called, and it'll just be us hanging out at stores, doing a signing beforehand, and taking advantage of our friends and family that live in those cities and trying not to murder each other, because we will be on the road for a week and a half.
Yeah, and I don't know if my camera on this is good enough to actually pick this up, but we're going to have little temporary tattoos and buttons and stuff like that, and maybe some prints and some comics and stuff. So it's going to be a great time. You guys should all come.
Because are we a little over 30 days away from New York Comic Con, I think?
Yeah, New York Comic Con is, I think, officially a month away.
Right, just about. I think it's like the weekend of the 10th, the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, something like that. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. There you 11th.
Go. Oh, okay, it's early October.
Second week of October.
Cool. Age of 70, Dirt, did you have any other questions?
Yeah, put us on the spot, sure.
I'm just like, I'm just glad that you guys will be at New York Comic Con, so, you know, be able to, you know, say what's up, you know, pass through and you know, just you know, put names to face, even though we are doing that right now. So
for sure, stop by, definitely stop by, dude.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dirt, you got anything? Because you know, we didn't want to take up the too much of their time. You know, poor. I was about to say we had Sanford Green on last week, and he really wanted to get back to the pages he was working on. Poor guy. But then he would get on a roll and start talking about something else. So we don't want to keep that as a habit.
I'm just curious how it works as collaborating as writers. And I don't know if I missed that. Did you guys talk about that before I came in or not?
No. Not only we talked about that. You know, it's kind of weird because we started together in the same place because we were in New York. So it would be. Are you just gonna? we started like either in
I'm his not, place. What?
Oh my god!
I can't even. We already have our own sound effects. Like I can't even hit the soundboard.
I don't even know what's going on.
You keep on like I think you're a little bit behind. So while you're trying to say something, like I've already started talking.
I didn't know that.
No, it's okay. It is difficult because he lives, he's jumped around a lot, but we're never in the same place. It's difficult. I think it yields some really great comics though. When there's arguments that happen, cause we're best friends, like first and foremost, you know? So we have that ability to say like, no, dude, you're being stupid. That's dumb. Right. Mm-hmm. And when we are arguing, we've learned over the years that what we are arguing about has nothing to do with our friendship. It has to do with trying, like we're both fighting for the same thing, which is to make great art. So we are, you know, it took some time, but we're actually finally able to scream and fight over a problem in the book or a plot point, and then at the end of it go, all right, man, well, I'll see you later. And then we're just fine, you know? So our wives hear us screaming at each other all the time and are like, how are you guys friends? But it's really... it's all in support of the same thing. That being said, when it's good, like which it is very often, when we are both like firing on all points and we're really in the zone, there is literally nothing better in the entire world than making a comic book with your best friend. And I mean, we get paid to do what little kids have done, mm-hmm. you know, since forever, which is like play with our toys and get paid for it. So it really is incredible. Really, it is.
Is it a lot of Elliot? Is it a lot of Skype conversations back and forth or just emails?
No, it's all good. Skype. No.
Like it's like over the phone and like sharing a document like a Google Doc or something.
We don't even do that. We talk about stuff on the phone. We'll like talk over plot points, and then at the end of the conversation, we'll basically go, all right, so do you want to take the first crack or do you? And sometimes I'll be like, well, I got a date tonight with the thing, and so you do it. And then he'll write a first draft and send it to me, and we'll go back and forth on that until it's the paybacks. So we don't even share documents or anything. We just
I guess it's like, since you're both best friends, it's a lot easier just to get on the phone and talk it out, and then decide, like I said, like, hey, you want to take this one, or I can take it.
Yeah, and then there's also a thing that happens that we might do on our tour, which is every now and then when we finish a script, we'll get on the phone and we'll do a radio play. And we'll both take on the roles of the different characters and we'll read the whole thing out aloud. And that is something that so far has been a special treat for just Elliot and I. But we thought about recording it and putting it out as a podcast. No, we'd have to wait until the actual issues themselves are out. Mm-hmm. And it's also really horrible because we're not good at it. So,
just think of it as like bonus content on the DVD.
Sure, yeah, we might do it. Elliot's voice for Reflectoid is maybe the best thing that's ever happened. But again, we might do this on our signing tour. We might actually bring a script on stage and have people act out a scene. But we'll have to see.
Do you already know what stores you're going to be doing appearances at in New York City?
Well, actually, not actually going to be doing any in New York.
Oh, okay.
We're actually going to have a table in Artist Alley.
Okay.
It's going to be like a Paybacks. So it's, you know, we're kind of seeing New York Comic Con as like our end of tour kind of party.
I see.
So we're gonna be on some panels, and we're gonna have all the merch, and we'll have a table and stuff. And really, it's part because we have a table and because we have signings and stuff, but it's also part because we might want to just like sit down and relax and like not be, you know, on, because we're going to be basically performing for like a week and a half, you know?
On the way to New York.
Gotcha. On the way to New York, yeah.
And Donna, you were a professor at SCAD?
No.
Yeah.
No. I was a mediocre student at best.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I went to SCAD with big dreams in my head of becoming a comic book artist.
SCAD, please elaborate what the
Savannah College of Art and Design.
Yeah, the Savannah College of Art.
Oh, okay.
Design, yeah. I went there with hopes of becoming a comic book artist, but I was in classes with Jeff Shaw, Trad Moore, a bunch of other people I was very much outclassed. And like when you're in a class, and Sean Gordon Murphy, so when you're in classes with those dudes and you look at their art, you know, it wasn't very hard for me to realize that I should probably just write, because I'm never gonna be as good as those guys, you know.
Yeah, they've put out a lot of good talent over the years.
Yeah, you just name-dropped a whole bunch of artists that have really made names for themselves within the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, they're all great.
I want to say we had – it's bad I don't remember now. I know we had a guest on maybe early in the year or last year that was from SCAD. I can't remember who it is now. We haven't had too many people, so I'll think about it after the show.
Go through the archives.
Yeah. All right. So I guess if you're more than welcome to both of you to stay on for the rest of the show, or if you need to leave, feel free to do that. We usually just, after the interviews, we just go over whatever comic book news came out over the week and talk about the books we read for the week.
Elliot, are you there? Elliot?
Wait for it.
Oh, man.
I never get to use that one.
Well, let me, I'm gonna jump off.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Elliot?
I love it, technology.
Buddy, are you there? Oh, man.
No.
The machine's got him. It's a robot.
It's a little, I'm gonna take the guess that it's a little bandwidth issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and jump off, because I'm gonna make sure that Elliot's not being like attacked by the Borg or something. but on behalf of Elliot, thank you for having us on, and thank you for the opportunity to come and speak about the book. And let's do it again, and maybe Elliot and I can be in the same room, and so it'll be a lot easier.
Oh, definitely. So, yes, make sure to get the Paybacks when it comes out September 16th, next week. Go to your local comic book store, or go to Comixology or Dark Horse app. Check it out.
Absolutely.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Yes.
All righty.
Cool. All right.
Now we can talk about him.
Rubber. I knew he'd come back. Elliot, you're there.
Elliot, you're back.
Hey, sorry, guys. Just wanted to say.
Aw.
Man, technology.
Elliot, you're breaking up. I'm sorry, man. And you're frozen, I believe. Not the movie.
Oh, no. We all got jokes tonight.
I'm pretty sure he was coming. Oh, there he goes. I'm pretty sure he's coming back just to say thanks for the listeners, the audience, people out there tuning in or viewing the video. So once again, Paybacks from Dark Horse Comics, September 16th.
Make sure to put it on your pull list, people. Let your retailer know you want to pull this next week.
And it is a fun book. We've all read it.
Absolutely. I'm definitely going to be pulling this for next week, because I got a real kick out of this. Like I was saying before, you know, maybe I was giving the cover a little bit too much effusive praise, but you know, that cover just sells you. It tells you exactly what this book is, you know, the premise of the book is, and that's phenomenal.
I had to go pull it up when you were talking about it. I thought I was missing something. It was like, okay, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, everyone's familiar with that.
Exactly. Image. Everyone's familiar with the, you know, with that particular scenario. And once you see that, oh, okay, now you start to understand and you see what's getting towed. Come on. That's yeah. That's a great, you know, gag, and that's a great opening, you know, like I think I called it an icebreaker joke.
Yeah. So yeah, they did a good job. If you like comedic comics set in a superhero tone, definitely worth checking out. Now I'm going to, again, for another week in a row, breeze through the news portion. Got your first look at Rutina Wesley as Lisa Warner on Arrow. You got Arrow Season 4 trailer, and a Flash trailer came out this week, Season 2 of The Flash. Oh, and also got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wow, I didn't even see this. They showed the hints of Secret Warriors, Inhumans, and Lash? Wow.
I mean, they all I got from it was the Lash character who shows up at the end of the...
Okay.
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. teaser trailer was very quick.
Okay.
It wasn't as long as the other ones. Chris Evans will keep playing Captain America as long as Marvel wants him.
That works.
James Gunn completes second draft of Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel's Luke Cage adds Frank Whiteley. Jessica Jones' Netflix series gets a release date of November 20th, and a teaser image or teaser trailer came out today. Is Cartoon Network planning a new JLA animated series? This actually got my attention earlier in the week. Especially on CBR, there's a image from, I guess, is it Warner Brothers Studios, of a wall full of posters of various already in production or on air animated shows, and one of the, I think, the last poster or the second to last poster was JLA.
So. Okay.
Yeah, it had silhouettes of all the different characters in the background. So you can sit there and go, oh, there's Arrow, and there's, you know, Superman, and there's whoever. So it's actually one of those posters that I want the poster.
Yeah.
After I saw it.
Yeah, part of me doesn't want to get my hopes up just because of how Young Justice was treated.
Mm.
I'm past the point of blaming Cartoon Network because I'm not sure if they were to blame or if it was just Warner Brothers, you know, hand, you know, and everything.
Actually, around that same time was the same time that Thundercats was canceled. There was something else that got canceled. I forget that was a
He-Man had a show. Was He-Man out there at the time?
That was long. That was way earlier than that. But the thing was is that in the industry, the animation industry, it's very hard to do a I don't want to say gritty, that's not the right term, but to do a more serious toned superhero show aimed at boys in that age range of, you know, I think they say it's like 8 to 14 is the age range that it's supposed to be for, as opposed to the other ones that are like 6 to 10 that they shoot for. Because you can do something like a Teen Titans Go, and that appeals to little kids, boys and girls. It appeals to grown-ups. But when you do a show that's like a Young Justice or a Thundercats or Justice League, that narrows, you know, where it points at. You know, six-year-old girls are less likely to watch one of those type of shows than they are to watch, you know, something like Teen Titans or Clarence or whatever. And so the only thing that has really kind of broken out of that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but that's more of a comedy, not a, you know, darker, more serious action type show. So the comedy is what helps get that one on the air.
Gotcha.
So it's just more of the industry and trying to, you know, figure out, is this really something that's best for TV? Is this something that's going to work better, you know, straight to Netflix or, you know, those types of things? Warner Brothers DC, you know, is doing a really good job with the direct-to-video features. All of the animated movies that they're doing, you know, hand over fist all throughout the year, they've started doing the Batman Unlimited as direct-to-video movies. So instead of that being a TV show like you normally would have expected on, you know, a Cartoon Network show at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever, they're doing it as animated movies 4 times a year. And that is a completely different model than what has ever come before. So that may be the new outlet. If, you know, Justice League as a little bit more family-friendly than some of the other DC animated movies, but it may end up being one of those things where you get, you know, the quarterly animated feature that comes out direct to video and Netflix, as opposed to being something that's constantly on TV every day. So there's just a little bit of news, a little bit of information for you.
It's all about selling the toys.
Yeah.
We got a better look at Diggle's outfit for season 4 of Arrow. Still has the horrible helmet.
It reminds me of the bad Juggernaut outfit from the X-Men movies.
Yeah. Oh,
no, I did think of that. Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome.
Legends of Tomorrow begins filming. Zack Snyder debunks Robin rumor. And I think the only thing the rumor is that his son is playing Robin, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Wonder Woman to begin filming in November. Transformers 5 may feature dual storylines, introduce Unicron. I'm glad this is in here because I actually watched Transformers 4 last weekend. It was on Netflix. I said, hey, I need to watch this. It actually took me 2 weekends to watch it because I paused it and didn't pick it up until like the following weekend.
I'm surprised you even picked it up the following weekend.
I mean, I had watched over half, so it was like, because all these movies are so freaking long.
Mm.
But I like the soundtrack.
Okay.
Well, that's so much about the soundtrack. Movie.
Yeah.
The Flash producer says, don't be surprised if Wally West becomes Kid Flash. Okay.
All right.
In obvious news, Elizabeth Olsen confirms Baron Zemo as the main villain in Captain America Civil War. Spider-Man not going to kill him off like they did Baron Strucker.
Well, have they confirmed that it's Helmet, or if it's is Helmet the father or the son? I can't remember. Oh, no, Heinrich is the father, I think. Helmet is the son.
I can't keep up with these people. I ain't read Captain America growing up.
Yeah. I think Heinrich is the father, so I'm presuming that he's playing Helmet the son, so they're probably not going to kill him off because he's an ongoing villain.
Got a lot of comp news from this week, if I remember correctly, of like new books announced and whatnot. There's a Star Wars comic to explain C-3PO's red arm and a C-3PO one-shot from James Robinson and Tony Harris, I believe.
All right.
Francis Manapul's new creator-owned book is revealed. He's just doing the writing for it, I believe.
But what is it?
Oh, I got to click the link to see.
Well, you should know this.
Man, I've been doing so much trying to get ready for the show. Broken Hollow. This is his first creator-owned project, and he says he'll be collaborating with another artist on this project who has yet to be revealed. At this time, there is no news on when this book will come out or what publishing company has picked it up. There's also a video of Manapul working on the cover for this piece showing how he crafted the piece of art. This is from comicvine.com. So the book's coming out. Don't know from who or when or where. DC Entertainment announces New York Comic Con 2015 panel lineup. R.I.P. Marmaduke creator Brad Anderson. Upper Deck announces Marvel Avengers posters. Speaking of posters, clear. Red Wolf, Marvel's first Native American hero, is getting his own comic book.
Coming straight out of the pages of Civil War. Not Civil War, Secret Wars.
Secret Wars.
Where in Civil Wars?
1872.
Ah, the one I didn't like.
Really?
I haven't read the second issue yet. I think it came out, 2 weeks ago? I haven't gotten to it yet. First issue didn't overwhelm me, so I've just been like, I'll get to the second issue.
Yeah, I'll take it back. I didn't like it, I just didn't care about it, I guess, is a much better way to put it.
Yeah. Which, honestly, I'm thinking that a lot with a lot of these Secret Wars books.
Yeah, I came to that conclusion. You know, I was like, you know, we'll get to that when we get to the reviews about how I felt about some of these less important Secret Wars books.
Yeah, now that they're ending and wrapping up, it's much easier to tell what is not important than compared to at the beginning when you're like, oh, well, this might lead to something. Now you're like, nope,
it didn't.
Meet Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat, Marvel's newest female-led comic book and Jessica Jones sidekick. DC announces Batman Day plans, including exclusive in-game special edition covers by Jim Lee and Jason Fabok.
Okay.
Get the first look at the official guidebook to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I'm kind of glad they're doing that. I saw this news blurb. I didn't have a chance to read any of the articles associated with it, but I'm a huge fan of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. And if this is something that I could hand to a casual fan and say, look, you want to find out how all these movies are connected? Here.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty cool.
Cover work AKA, by...
you hand it to your girlfriend and say, learn this.
Yeah, pretty much.
With me, you got to know it.
No, I would hope that by that point I would have schooled her and she would have learned that the feet of the master, but you know.
We mentioned this earlier during the interview, but Valiant is ending Unity with an all-comedy special with a big host of creators. Aftershock Comics announced its first wave of books. this is kind of interesting. Christopher Sabella, a writer, I believe, is going to live in the Clown Motel for a month.
Okay. And
this is being kickstarted because he's going to, I guess, write a book about it.
I don't know. You got me.
Variety Cat says, don't skip this. This is important.
So, which one?
Ghostbusters Spirit Guide to Become a Real Book.
Oh, Tobin's Spirit Guide?
Says Ghostbusters Spirit Guide. Let's see. This is from CNET.com. My internet actually wants to work quickly so I can open these links. Okay, so if you're a character in the Ghostbusters universe, or simply an avid fan, then you know the name John Horace Tobin, author of famous ghost spotting reference book Tobin's Spirit Guide. Tobin's Spirit Guide, first referenced in the original 1984 Ghostbusters movie, and since making appearances in offshoot productions like the animated series Real Ghostbusters, will appear in bookstores next year. It's coming from publisher Insight Editions, which already has Ghostbusters: The Ultimate Visual History on its coming soon list. Tobin's Spirit Guide would be more like an Audubon guide to ghosts, covering creepies, crawlies, and phantoms from the movies and expanded universe. Do we have Ghostbusters fans here?
Yeah, I'll take one of those.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I recognize the name. As soon as Dirt dropped the Tobin Spear guy, I think I remember Dan Aykroyd's character, and I forget the actor's name, the director, Egon Spengler, dropping this as a reference during the movie, so...
Well, and what's funny is we have a Hy-Vee grocery store here in town, and mm-hmm. it has a separate, like the building is almost made like it's three different buildings. You have a restaurant, a grocery store, and a liquor store, basically, built okay. in this one giant complex. And where the alcohol is, the employees who work in the alcohol section are called spirit guides because they help you find the right drink. You know,
exactly,
you
go the right spirit, right?
And so I was really confused. I was in there one time with my wife, and she goes, oh, they're the spirit guides. And I was looking, I was like, there's the book from Ghostbusters? Busters is here. What are you talking about? Like, I'm looking at the displays. I'm trying to find something, but apparently that's what the employees are called. So maybe they'll get a copyright notice here in the next couple weeks.
Sure.
A new look at Contest of Champions number one. Let the games begin. Marvel teases Gwenpool.
Oh yeah, yay.
Mark Millar reveals the secret history of Chrononauts. Announced a sequel for 2016. Comixology.com gets smart lists and enhanced library options as well. Chewbacca's solo comic is a Star Wars Western. Funko launches Star Wars subscription bot service, which Radicat says, I'll buy that for $1 or a few.
Yeah, that's definitely aimed at folks, collectors like Radicat.
I'm going to actually click this so I can see what the heck this is about. So this is just another subscription bot service?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, but based on Star Wars, and you know that's going to be a huge
is there enough
market.
This must be one of those things that ships every, like, 3 months or something. Because I can't see doing, like, a monthly Star Wars. Is there enough Star Wars content to...
Oh, yeah, there definitely is. Okay. They've licensed Star Wars to everything. I'm waiting for one of these subscription boxes that will promise it does not come with a pop vinyl figure from Funko. Because I'm pretty much tired of those.
I just bought two on Force Friday. Kind of like them. When I end up buying toys, I don't buy toys much, but when I do, they're the Funko, the pop vinyls. It says here from this Robot Sits comic book resources article, the Smuggler's Bounty featuring exclusive Star Wars collectibles, apparel, and accessories. The first box titled Star Wars The Force Awakens ships in November. And then for $25 every other month, a new box containing Star Wars themed Funko products value anywhere at more than $50 will arrive at your house. Or you can purchase the 150 annual boss membership, which includes a year-end mystery reward. Okay. The debut bots will include two exclusive pop vinyl figures from The Force Awakens, in addition to other surprises. Sign up for the November bots ends on November 12th. All right. That's it for news. I'm going to skip variant covers unless anyone has one they'd like to point out. Oh, I will mention that some comic book creators were interviewed for a CNN Money, I believe it was, article talking about the Apple Pen that was announced yesterday for the iPad Pro, basically using it as a sketching artist tablet. Mm-hmm. It was Dave Marquez, Mike Norden, and there was a third person I can't think of now. But basically they just said that, you know, they're excited to try it out, see how it works for them. Because they were saying, because I've never held or seen a Wacom in person, but I guess apparently they're a little too bulky and heavy to, you know, travel with and like sit on the couch and do your artwork
on. Yeah, they're meant to be. They're meant to be stand, you know, propped up on a desk.
I thought that was so clever, so it being like a tablet form thing, so you could like be a little more user mobile friendly.
I was about to say it's not a true tablet like you know, like our iPads would be. It's a, you know, it's just a, you know, it's a tablet in the sense that that's the interface.
Right.
But I think that's where, you know, where Apple is looking to you know, expand.
My issue has always been trying to use one of those things is that you don't get the friction like you normally do when you've got a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen and you're, you know, writing on it, drawing on it. You get that that feel of the texture, you know, in your hand. And whenever I try to draw on a tablet with a pen on a, you know, using a pad, using a I used to have one of the Wacom tablets years ago, but the problem was always that it just there's no friction, so it's just everything is so smooth and slick, and it, you know, it goes so fast, and I'm always used to, you know, feeling that pressure. Like with a pencil, you push down hard to get the thick line, you barely touch it to get, you know, a little bit of shading on there, and you really didn't have any of that. Nowadays, it may be completely different. If you're buying a $1,300 iPad and pen, it might be a little bit different experience from the $99 tablet I was using years ago. But still, you really have to be committed to your craft if you're going to be dropping that kind of cash on that type of hardware.
And it is mostly artists that'll be buying it for that purpose. Because at 12.9 or whatever it is inches, it's definitely like way too big to be just to read comics on, which is what I use my iPad for right now. During the iPad event yesterday, they did mention that you were pointing out the pressure and whatnot. So they did say if you press harder down, you get the thicker lines with the pencil, and if you do it lightly, yeah, you get the lighter.
And I've got a bamboo pen that'll do that right now on the tablet. But the difference is the feedback on it, the, you know, the feel of it. Because when you do it on a sheet of paper, you know, if you lightly touch, it'll go a little faster. But if you push down harder, you're making friction so it slows down. And when you're using a plastic nub on a glass screen, you know, barely touching it or pushing down hard, it still has that same coefficient of friction because of the way the materials are made. You're still sliding all over everything so fast. You're not getting that feedback.
Right. I mean, I really haven't handled the latest Wacom tablets and the Wacom pens, but I'm fairly certain that they've progressed to the point where you actually do feel some tactile feedback.
I don't know. We'll have to see. Although, like I said, if you're dropping $1,300 like that, it better be something.
Yeah. Alrighty. Quick ad read. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through cspn.us. Do it today. Alrighty. Books to read or to review, books to review. Did Dirks didn't fill the sheet out?
I did not fill out the form.
I just like scrolling through to see what everyone else read. Did Roddy? No, he didn't do it either. Let me get one out the way. Boom Studios, Boom Box Imprint had Tyson Hesse's Diesel Number 1, which is, not even sure how to really describe it. It's a sort of a story about a young girl who's about to turn 18, and once she turns 18, she can, I guess, legally have ownership of the flying city ship that everyone lives in called Peacetown. It originally was her father's, but I guess her father passed away, so he's left it to her. So she's all energetic and full of enthusiasm to get going and be the captain of the ship, but the ship already has a captain who's, of course, is more mature and knows what she's doing compared to Diesel is the kid's name. And so there's a lot of, it's very, you know, very humorous scenes of them, her arguing with various supporting characters, and then the story gets going near the end where, like, some mysterious, like, storms or things start popping up as they're flying around, and it's a 4-issue limited series. Tyson Hesse, I apologize if I'm not saying the name right. He does the art and writing for the book. It's very nice, very sort of cartoonish style. You get a lot of animated faces and a lot of emotions.
Well, he works for Cartoon Network.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I think he started a book called Bravest Warriors, also at Boom, and I think he was an artist on Adventure Time or Regular Show. I forget which one it is.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up the synopsis, because I know I posted it on the site, and it referenced some of the other work. I want to make sure I get the proper credit, but yeah, I really enjoyed it, and since it's a 4-issue series, it should be not too bad to keep up with. Let's see. So the synopsis for the series is: Hop aboard the airship Peacetown as Tyson Hesse from Bravest Warriors, the amazing world of Gumball brings readers an original coming of age fantasy in the vein of Amulet and Hayao.
Yes. What?
Miyazaki's Howl's.
I walked in just as Tim was actually getting that correct.
Yeah. So nice, fun series. I can keep going if anyone like.
You keep going, and if I've read something, I'll jump in.
Because I actually did read at least about 8 books this week. Red Hood and Arsenal number 4. I am shocked. I like this series.
Okay. I think this keeps coming up, right?
I think we said this for issue 3 a month ago. Yeah. But man, this is a fun series. I don't know what happened after the 2-month break with DC, but like once they came back, Scott Lobdell's been killing it with this and Doomed. So Red Hood Arsenal series. They've been sort of mercenaries for hire, taking jobs, superhero mercenaries, taking on bad guys, and their latest adventure has taken them to Gotham City, where they run across the new cybernetic Batman, aka Jim Gordon, and that begins the issue. Then we sort of jump backwards in time to see right when they first got to Gotham and what they were doing. They're basically trying to take care of this evil guy named Underbelly, who they fought last issue, and they believe that he got his start from Gotham because I think he deals with like fears and he's an emotion based villain, and if you have so much evil and hate in your body, you must come from Gotham City is basically what Red Hood believes. So once they get there, they go off there on the separate ways, which is explained because Arsenal has to go, and he doesn't have to, but he goes to an AA meeting because he's a recovering, he has an addiction problem he's still recovering from. So I thought that was kind of cool that they took time, because each issue is basically like a Red Hood issue, co-starring Arsenal. So it was nice that they spend a little time showing what Arsenal kind of does in his personal time as well. And he interacted with a character from Gotham City. I guess I'll go ahead and say it because I'm sure a lot of people might not be reading the series, but they should because it's good. So he goes to an AA meeting, but he's underneath the sewers, underneath the room where the AA meeting is taking place. And under there is also Killer Croc, who is sort of acts like his, I forget what the
sponsor.
Sponsor, thank you. So they're like, they're kind of like checking up on each other because I guess Killer Croc helped him get through his issues, which I thought was kind of cool.
I don't know when that happened.
Yeah, I thought it was cool it happened, but I was just like, did this happen in post New 52 continuity somewhere? Or we just like have to assume that this happened. So that was cool. I compare Dennis Midry, the artist. His art reminds me a lot of Paco Medina over at Marvel, who I like. So obviously I like Dennis Midry and the colorist. Basically the whole art team, they do a good job. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else. But yeah, I also like that it's Red Hood and Arsenal is off doing their own thing, but it also, it doesn't tie into any real continuity, but it also does, since they brought in the new Batman as a guest star. So it's cool that it's off on its own, but it can also loosely tie in where it needs to. And
that's kind of how the comics were when we were growing up.
Yeah.
They were all set in the same universe, but just because, a building exploded in one book doesn't mean that everybody in every other book had to, go running, scrambling from falling debris.
Right.
And we know it doesn't hurt to have Batman as a guest star in your book, so... And he's not an overbearing presence either. The story doesn't hinge on his appearance. And his Scott Lobdell's other book, Doomed, is sort of doing the same thing because he had, at the end of last issue, he had he teased the Teen Titans making an appearance. So same thing, Doomed is kind of doing its own thing. I think he's at Star Labs, and there's what they introduced the Alpha Centurion previous issue, but they can also bring in the Teen Titans where need be. So yeah, I'm loving this series. I'm not sure how long it'll last, but I'll be reading each issue. Do we want to do? Let's do the book that you teased over Twitter to us, Dirt. Civil War number whatever it is.
Number four.
I read this is the last book I read before the show because as I'm always trying to add books to my iPad to read, every now and then I'll add a book. I always forget to add a book, and this was one I forgot to add until this afternoon. So we're getting near the end of the whole Blue versus the Iron feud. We see who the real villain is,
or at least the real who the real. Maybe not the villain, but the real cause behind the continuing conflict.
Well, although we see who it is, and then we see who it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I tweeted out that you guys were going to hate it.
Yeah.
Until you get towards the end, because I was sitting there reading this, going, "Oh, this is great! They totally assassinated this character. Like, right. I love it. I mean, like, this guy's a total jerk in this reality. I love it."
Yeah.
But then it turns out, you know, that there's another twist to the story there that we won't spoil here.
Yeah,
but
we won't spoil it.
But did you have a bad feeling in the pit of your stomach while you were reading the first half of this book?
I quickly read your tweets, and I in the back of my mind as I was reading this, kept thinking, okay, it's coming. It's not what I think it is. It's coming. Dirt told me it's not what I think it is. And then when it was revealed, I was like, oh, it's really more than just one event.
Yes. Well, because that was the other thing, is that when the final reveal happened, it made me go, wait a minute, what order did the books come out from Marvel in the last decade? Like, I had to sit there and go, okay, wait, this happened, then this happened.
Right.
Okay, well, this works. This makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what I thought was great, though, was that, you know, you teased it just well enough that when I got to the end of the book, I was like, you know, as the Cap fan who's wearing a Cap shirt, you know, tonight, you know, I couldn't help but sort of cheer as even though I knew that whatever was happening was kind of misguided, I still couldn't help but cheer for the character. I was like, yeah, you know, that's a pretty cool moment right at the end of that book.
Yeah, I just thought the first portion of it was, yeah, I did find it lame, the first portion,
because
I was like, where is this coming from? This person isn't acting how they... I mean, I'm all for trying to take a character, you know, a new spin, as long as it's explained fully, which, you know, granted, one third of an issue is enough time to do a proper reveal, which is why I thought it was crazy at first. So, yeah.
Well, here, let me see if I can get this working right. I want to throw a little fire on the flame.
You want me to hit the spoiler bell?
No. This is...
Oh, okay.
Not a spoiler, but this is just a little something to throw in your face here. Boom. Tony was right.
Oh!
This is a T-shirt that you can get on Redbubble right now.
Yeah.
This came out back in the days of Secret Wars. I remember seeing this being tweeted around the interwebs, and there you go.
Yeah.
Actually, I should make that my icon.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Tony was right.
Is that something you use? I guess we could stay in the Secret Wars realm. Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, number 5.
So I read this. Did anyone else read it?
Yep.
So, you know, I've been a huge fan of this series. After the kind of rough beginning, you know, I really liked where this book went. This was a kind of a pretty typical ending for, you know, there wasn't that much that happened that was unexpected, at least from my end. You know, we get, you know, a final confrontation between, spoiler alert, although it is the last issue of the series, so it's not that big of a spoiler. We get a final confrontation between Regent Augustus Roman, who I think is another character in the mainstream Marvel U, and the Parker family, I believe so, and the Parker family. Because I believe I Googled this once, and Augustus Roman is actually a character. Now I'm going to Google it now. But in the meantime, you know, we have this confrontation, and Annie Mae Parker, Peter Parker and Mary Jane's daughter, comes through in the clutch, and you know, basically the family takes out the big bad guy, and you know, we kind of have a reaffirmation of Spidey's no kill rule that he's violated a number of times in this particular continuity slash battle world reality. So, you know, did it wrap up nice and neat? I thought so. I enjoyed the ride getting here. I didn't think this was the strongest issue, but it was a nice, you know, it was a nice wrap up to the story. So, you know, like I said, I think I enjoyed the previous two issues a lot more than this one, simply because it was a great build up and this was sort of the ending that we expected. And, you know, and that's pretty much it. What did you guys think?
I just want to say, I didn't like the part where he's locked away. And I want to try to not spoil too much for people who still want to read this, but
mm-hmm.
He's locked away like every other hero that has been captured, mm-hmm. but yet somehow he's the one hero who's able to fight his way through and break out.
I think they sort of explain that, but they don't, you know, they don't go into detail because he's newly encased.
Well,
like newly.
Yes, but I'm sure he's not the first one. And you know, someone like a Power Man or an Iron Fist, I think, would be more the type of guy to smash through something than Spider-Man. But, you know, whatever. I mean, it's right. Still just one of those things where, of course, he's the one because it's his book.
Right.
But it just still felt a little like it needed, you know, Mary Jane should have thrown a big rock at it or something, I don't know, in order to weaken it so that he could break through, as opposed to him just being like, well, now I'm angry.
And, exactly. You know, what I was going to say, I'm angry. Exactly. What I thought was going to happen was that Annie Mae was going to break, which is what, you know, where the story seemed to be going.
Mm-hmm.
That Annie Mae was going to free him, and that would lead to the final confrontation. So, you know, I thought that was pretty, you know, I thought that's where it was going. I didn't quibble with it too much because I thought they kind of explained it. The character that I was referring to, and it's not a direct correlation, is Tyrannus. He's actually a Hulk villain, and his real name in the Marvel U is Romulus Augustus. And, you know, obviously it's a different character altogether, but I think that, you know, that might have been the inspiration for this particular Secret Wars villain.
Hmm. I did like seeing the Parker family find together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. At least seeing Peter and MJ together like this for me, tasting back to the 90s.
Yeah, and it was nice. I liked it. It made me really miss those days.
Although, and I wonder. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think I of course didn't notice it when I read it, but apparently it ended with the to be continued. So who knows what will make it out of Secret War. I think so. And
well, he basically says something along the lines of, not everything finishes with a happily ever after. Sometimes the story goes on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, in a perfect world, you'd get a happily ever after, not us. Every chapter of our lives ends with a big old to be continued.
Right.
So, who knows?
Not the link to let people know we're doing reviews, but Bleeding Cool, of course, is speculating that something that happened in this issue could lead to that Iron Man spinoff book, perhaps.
But it seems very tenuous.
Yeah.
Like, the link that they try to draw it's like a conspiracy video on YouTube trying to make these connections here.
I remember Wednesday morning I saw their tweet promoting it with spoilers, and I was like, I'm going to read the issue first. So I know I can, you know, see for myself, and then I go back and see what they were talking about. And I read it, and I was like, okay, what the hell are they talking about? Right. And I read the article, I'm like, I guess? Yeah, it's very, a lot of connecting of dots.
All right, I guess I'm going to have to read this Bleeding Cool article and see what y'all are talking about. But, yeah, that's interesting. All right. Let's see.
What else did you read, Tim? Did you read Star Wars and Darth Vader?
Yes, I did. Let's do A-Force number 4 right quick, and I'll be done with Secret Wars stuff, at least from my side. We find out who the traitor is. It's who you thought it was.
Yep.
The art is still great.
There's still one issue left.
Yeah, this next issue should be interesting. I'd assume it'd be. I want it to be a big drag-out, knockout fight, especially with who they're going up against.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this was obvious throughout even since the first issue, but I like how they've kept the team small. Like, I noticed that, was it 5 members are left of A-Force?
Yeah.
I won't say who the 5 are, just mm-hmm. because that will spoil things, I guess. But it reminded me of, you know, typical superhero teams where you have your cast of about 5 or 6 characters that you focus on. And I don't know if Dazzler always was wearing roller skates in their issues, but I noticed it here.
Oh, no. Tim is showing his youth.
I was like, oh.
Yes.
Did she have those in the other issues?
Yes, she had roller skates in her very earliest appearances. And
I mean the other issues of Secret Wars, I mean.
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know she, you know, back in the day she wore them.
Yeah.
I just didn't notice it in this series. As you can look at the cover, you might see who the traitor is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little spoilerific.
Yeah, just a bit, just a bit.
I think that about sums up A-Force 4.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about this is that it definitely leads to, if they're going to use a lot of the main characters in this book as the leads of the A-Force team that comes out in All New, All Different, I'm going to like that book. I like these characters working together. We'll see how they meld, you know, in the new continuity. But, you know, I like this group of characters.
Be curious to see if this Dazzler is the one that makes it out of Secret Wars.
Right, instead of the punk rock one?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, now we can get to the Star Wars books. Which one do you want to do first, Dirt?
Let's start with Darth Vader.
All right, let's pull up Darth Vader.
Because I like that one more.
We might disagree on that one.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I, you know what? I might disagree with you on that one, too, Dirt. Only because without overstepping and stepping all over your, you know, the reviews, this book kind of lost me 2/3 of the way through. And we'll get to that, I presume.
Why don't you give us the rundown for Darth Vader, Dirt?
So he's got his new, I don't know what you'd call it, his new handler, who's been sent by the Emperor to figure out what happened with the shuttle that was broken into and all of the...
The money.
I want to say credits were stolen out of. And, of course, we know that Vader and Aphra were behind it, but they've hidden that from the Emperor. And so this guy is trying to figure out what's going on, and he's... basically like a crash team investigator. Mm-hmm. He's putting the rubble together of this broken ship and has figured out, they faked a meteor strike. They blew it open. They went in and stole this stuff. And so now Vader's got to figure out how far can he let this guy go before he's got to do something about it. Is he going to figure it out, turn him into the Emperor? Which, of course, we know in the long run how the relationship between Vader and the Emperor plays out. But, you know, at this point in time, you don't know exactly, how it's all going to work. And so I just find it, one, I like how it took that turn of, I don't want to say it's a procedural because it's not, but the idea of piecing the crash back together, looking at how the criminals did it, trying to figure it out, and of course we know that the guy who was behind the whole thing is the one that he's explaining it to the whole time. I always like those types of setups because you never know when a character like Vader is going to snap and just, pop the guy's head off and shoot him on an airlock or something.
Right.
So you're just waiting for that tension to build. But at the same time, if he can mislead him and make him go back and report something completely different, then, of course, that's going to be better for him, too. So, again, we know how it plays out in the long run, but I like seeing how this plays on that relationship of... I almost wonder if the Emperor knows that Vader has done this. But he doesn't care because it's evil, So Vader has done something evil to backstab him. That is the way of the Sith. Mm-hmm. Eventually the student will kill his master and he becomes the new master and takes on a new student. You know, that's the nature of the Sith. So maybe he's okay with it. I don't know if that conversation will happen or not, but that's the type of thing that I like reading, especially when you have a book, the main character is the villain, mm-hmm. kind of like Irredeemable back in the day with Mark Waid or Empire. From Mark Waid, not the TV show.
Right.
I like having that villain who is your protagonist, and so I just like the way that plays out. The one thing I didn't like is it went back to the twins. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for the twins when they first appeared in the book, and I still don't see any particular reason why I should care about them now.
Right.
But that's really the only thing about this book that I didn't like was that they were in it. But even then, they weren't in it that much, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Right. And what's funny is that you kind of touched on where this book started to lose me, which is when the twins reappeared. And, we see, one role that they may play in the future. It's teased. But then we jump back into Aphra's story, you know, the storyline that she's exploring, you know, with you using some of these credits and then finding, you know, well, you can go on and describe it because it seems like you're about to get to it.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, she's investigating a certain angle and I don't want to spoil too much, but when I got to it, I was like, I guess they can only fit so much story into, they can only fit so much of this into one monthly issue. And so you're meant to be caught with a cliffhanger so that you pick up the next issue. And I just couldn't bring myself to care where this particular storyline is going, you know, where Aphra's storyline is going. Maybe next issue it'll become more clear, you know, because it's not like I'm going to stop reading just because I didn't like the way this particular issue ended. So, you know, I'm willing to give it another issue to see how this plays out, but I wasn't a fan of how it just sort of took me out of Darth Vader's story and took me into Aphra's and where she ends up, you know, going.
And my feeling is that they wouldn't be showing that unless it's going to somehow play back into what we're seeing.
Of course.
There's a part earlier in the book where Vader lands on one of the other planets in the solar system, and these rebels, he allows the rebels who are hiding out to find him and track him down so that he can slaughter them.
Right,
and
to create part of, right.
Create an alibi.
Exactly. And a cover story, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if this is somehow playing into this bigger cover story, this bigger alibi. He's planting all these things that he can come back later when this guy, this investigator, this lackey who's following him around, he may go to the Emperor and say, oh, well, obviously Vader did this because of this, and Vader can go, no, if you go and look, I did this, and, you know, this happened, and then they can go check it out, and Vader's story will check out, and then this guy gets, you know, his head popped off and thrown out of an airlock. I'm just guessing he's going to get his head popped off and thrown out of an airlock, but... but yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's the same reason why I liked Superior Spider-Man so much. Mm-hmm. I just love the twist of having the bad guy be the hero that you're rooting for in this story. Like, you want to see him succeed. You're watching Darth Vader going, I hope he pulls it off. Like, I hope he's able to trick this guy. You know, I like seeing this guy, you know, play out. And,
right.
I mean, let's face it, it's one of the coolest villain characters in the history of all time, one of the best looks of a villain character of all time. So,
sure.
I just think they've done a really good job.
Well, like I said, they had me 2/3 of the way through the book. So I'm glad to see how the next issue plays out.
Roddy says, it seems like Vader is running a long con. We're just not seeing all the cards.
Yeah,
that's definitely what's happening.
And he also chimed in earlier, back to Red Hood and Arsenal. He said, hadn't read this issue, number 4, but Red Hood and Arsenal has been pretty fun, though not sure about time to bat sighting for Renew Your Vows, he says. So, out of all the powers in the Marvel U, Regent needed Peters. I get it, but still weak.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, he's the star of the book, so.
Right.
So, yeah. I thought the same thing, but like you said, it's his book, so. Oh, and at the end of Darth Vader, I believe I know what they were teasing. They're teasing, I guess, a connection to Vader back on Naboo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just make sure I was understanding that correctly.
All right. So let's go to the worstly titled Star Wars book of all time, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire, number 1.
So I understand that you were not a fan of this book, Dirt.
It was okay.
That's my overall impression of it.
I was disappointed in the book. It built up a lot of expectations, mm-hmm. especially because it's supposed to be this bridge for the new trilogy of movies, or the new explosion of movies, as it may end up being.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I'm probably going to get a lot of people disagreeing with me on this one, but I didn't care much for the artwork.
Really?
I didn't like the style. It was too much of a manga-inspired style for me. I just really didn't care for it.
Is it the layouts as opposed to the actual art itself?
And I think it was the faces.
Really?
Yeah, the faces.
Everyone did kind of have like a mannequinish face to them. That's kind of Marco Cicchetto
style. Right, that's his style. He actually has a very comic book style. I didn't think it was manga as much as it is like a true comic book style. And his, you know, his likenesses were passable, you know, but there's not much to the faces of the other characters, you know, like these characters that they're introducing for the first time. Yeah, they are distinguishable from each other, but they're not remarkable. and yeah. they're not, you know, they don't express much, you know, emotion. They don't express much, you know, to help the story along. But I thought that his faces for the likenesses that we were supposed to recognize were pretty good.
And I thought the ships looked good. The space battles, like that type of artwork was fine.
Right.
But just these new characters that they introduced, I just really didn't care for them. And that was another thing that disappointed me in the book, is that it did focus on basically one new character and her husband and his friend is in there a little bit. But that's basically who you're focused on in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not Han Solo, not Chewbacca, not Luke Skywalker, not Princess Leia, not, you know, any of the people on the cover. They're there, but they're not the focus of the book. They're there to push the story along that this character is caught up in the middle of. And
right.
that was something that, you know, if they had said, hey, this is a book about this all-new character, and this is going to be the big thing for Force Awakens, then okay, then I'd understand. But to go into this...
That news didn't start leaking out until a couple of weeks before released, I think. And the only reason I saw it is because I read almost every article that comes out.
And I try to just stay away from a lot of those spoilers on this stuff. Mm-hmm. I want to pick up the issue kind of, you know, with an open mind. And so I wanted to try to not follow a lot of the news on this stuff and just read it as mm-hmm. a, you know, random person would.
Right.
And so, again, I got to the end of the book and I'm like, okay, well, we have to care about these people, and I just really don't. You know, they've given me no reason to really care for him, except she's apparently a good pilot.
Exactly. What I was going to add to this is that I enjoyed this book right up until the end of the battle for Endor. You know, like, I thought it was great that, you know, like, how they characterized her as a great pilot and how they sprinkled in things that we know happened in Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and how she sort of interacts and, you know, this is, you know, the usual retcon, right? Squeezing her into the story. And once we get to the celebration, I'm not spoiling anything here for a movie that came out, years ago, right? We get to the celebration on Endor, and, you know, really the story starts to kick off there. And that's when I find myself, similarly to Dirk, not quite caring so much about the characters we're supposed to be following at this point. I still actually want to see what happens to, you know, to Luke and to Leia. We do have... you know, without spoiling too much, I'll ring the bell because we do want some people, we do want fans to read this. We do have Han and Chewie moving forward with, you know, the immediate storyline that's in this book. So at least we do have some of the characters that we recognize and follow from Star Wars, you know, in this book right now as part of the active storyline. So that at least is happening with these characters.
Right. I liked the interplay between Han Solo and Lando,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they're down on the planet. And I would have liked more of that, you know, more of them discussing their plans.
Mm-hmm.
Han Solo goes in the bunker. I would like to have seen what happened in the bunker instead of having this page of her sitting there staring at the door waiting for something to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know. Her sitting there staring at the screen going, boy, I hope they're okay, is not as exciting as seeing him go in there and see what, you know, actually happens.
I think that's an issue too, you know, because that's, you know, we've just gotten the beginning of this particular bunker battle,
right. And,
you know?
And I get that, but then at the same time, it's like, I don't particularly care about this character,
mm-hmm.
and you're giving me a page of her sitting there just staring at this door and at her view screen just waiting for something to happen.
I understand, I understand.
That's not, for me, the most exciting way to push a cliffhanger for the next issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
for me, I will say that my interest did pick up once they introduced Lando and Han, which was about halfway to three-fourths near the end of the book.
Oh, no, they had me when she tried to shoot down Luke.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had me right at that scene.
Oh, yeah, basically whenever original characters start showing up, that's when I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, you know that's Lando in the Falcon, right, going on their run, you know, at the Death Star. But the second they show the A-Wing, and she's just like, why can't I lock the stupid thing? And you find out who's on it, and that actually had to jog my memory. I'm like, oh, okay, that actually did probably happen in Jedi, you know?
Yeah, I like that, how they're taking, you know, they're filling in little small gaps, something like, you know, what happened for Luke between leaving the Death Star and getting onto the
celebration,
moon.
Right?
Yeah. that's kind of fun. So we'll see what... and of course, for everything that's journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, everything's quote-unquote seeded with clues to The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what effect this has on the movie.
Sure enough, sure enough. All right. Wow, it is late, fellas.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me
in rapid fire? Because I've read a lot of books. I don't want to dwell too long on any of them.
Okay, you jump quickly through what you got, and if we got something to add, we'll shout it out.
You got it. I read mostly Marvel, but I'm going to cover the DC books that I read this week. Batman number 44. I don't know if anyone else read this.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a one-off. It's actually a story that's told, a story from the past that's just past 0 year, and it's kind of a politically relevant story that kind of draws on a lot of current day current events, and you know, it's a real interesting tale co-written by Snyder and Brian Azzarello, and it definitely shows because Azzarello is a crime writer. And I think that the way this story plays out is definitely, you know, Azzarello's role in the co-writing definitely, you know, is reflected as this story is played out, and how the mystery is unwoven from the dead body that we start with, and you know where we end with. Like I said, this definitely draws on some themes from current day events, and I liked it. It seemed very out of place because we have been following the adventures and misadventures of Jim Gordon as Mecha Robo Batman. You know, so that part was a little strange, but it was nice to see kind of a classic Batman story, even though this would have been perfectly in place as like a Legends of the Dark Knight type story.
I didn't particularly care for this. I mean, I like the artwork a lot. I've always liked Jock's artwork.
Right.
For me, the artwork was much more of a draw than the story. But the main problem I had with the story is that a crime happens, and Batman goes, oh, well, this is how it must have happened. And then he goes there. They go, no, 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 that's not how it happened. You're missing this. So then he goes to this guy. Oh, this is how it must have happened. No, that's not how it happened. You're missing this. Oh, so then he goes to the next guy. Oh, well, this is how it must have happened. Nope, didn't happen that way. Oh, this is how it, like, it just kept – he was like – it's like an episode of Psych. Like, he would get a new piece of information and then go, oh, well, I've got a new theory. This explains everything. And then you're 100% wrong.
Hmm.
You got to go get the next piece of information. And it was just, like, it just felt, this is Batman hitting, you know, foul ball after foul ball after foul ball after foul ball, jumping to conclusions and being wrong about everything all the way through until, like, the last page.
Look at Dirt using the sports reference. Look at that.
See, well, I saw a reference to the movie Major League last night, so it's got Major League on my mind.
I mean, we were talking about Hardball, too. So, you know,
I've never seen that one.
Oh,
but I love Major League.
You didn't even get the G-Baby reference. Oh.
No, I had no idea.
But anyway, what else? Oh, Action. The other book I read was Action Comics number 44. This book kind of landed a little flat for me this week. Maybe in the wake of the reveal in Action. No, not in Action. Is it Superman?
Batman, Superman, whatever it is.
No, I didn't read that this week, actually. Was there a reveal in that book?
Yes, actually.
It supposedly ties in, I saw.
Yeah, the end of this book ends with a particular character talking to somebody, and you don't know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of Batman Superman, a second character who's very well known in the DC Universe appears in that same room with the female character at the end of this book.
Okay.
So tying this storyline directly into the storyline that was happening in Batman Superman.
Ah.
It'd be nice if Action Comics said, like, you know, tune into Batman Superman, whatever, 20...
Yeah, or read this first, or right. Something like that. Because I read this first, and I felt kind of the same way. I was like, all right, well, that's weird. Obviously, that must be building to something. But
yeah.
Then I read Batman Superman, and you get to the end, and I'm like, okay, now I'm much more intrigued after seeing how these books tie together.
I see. So, yeah, I definitely missed out on that connection because I did not read Batman Superman yet. So I'm going to be reading that. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I'm glad that, you know, you also, you know, got that feeling from reading Action. Like, I was disappointed, kind of, because, you know, I've been really enjoying Pack's take on this new mostly depowered Superman and what his, you know, and this villain that he was kind of dealing with, and that it was a villain based on emotion, and I just kind of I was really off put by a lot of that, but I was, you know, I kind of slogged my way through to the end and didn't find myself all that entertained.
Right. Well, and also in this action, one of the characters gets infected by whatever this thing is.
Right,
and,
creating a new character, basically.
Right, and but suddenly she's like, oh, no, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, you know, maybe she's like, no, it feels like this was made for me. I'm good. Don't worry about it. And then walks away. And, like, that's it. Like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to suddenly assume that this thing that takes over people's minds and turns them crazy hasn't done this to you, and this is some sort of ploy in order for you to get away from me. I'm just going to let you go and assume that everything's fine.
Right.
I did like her, that person getting... I like that it happened too quick, but I did appreciate, like, how she was able to control it. Mm. But yeah, if it was, like, maybe it's something that'll be saved for later explanation.
Right. Yeah, but I agree with her. I, you know, now that I think back on it, that did seem a little... And like you said, Tim, it was a little quick. It just came out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, I'm good, I've got it under control. And no, it's not how it usually works.
Yeah, so go read Batman Superman.
Okay.
Besides seeing Superman and Aquaman punching each other in the face for a couple pages, which is always fun, the ending does tie directly into the ending of Action.
Gotcha. Okay.
I went and, I read, whatever, last month's Batman Superman to get caught up before I read this one, and I got to the end of it, I was like, Aquaman? Caught me by surprise, because I haven't been paying attention to the cover of this one.
All right. So let's see. More Marvel. Let's see. So we already covered Civil War. We covered Darth Vader and Journey to Star Wars. Some Secret War stuff. Korvac Saga number 4. Harkening back to something that Dirt mentioned, how we sort of get to the end of the Secret Wars tie-in limited series and realize then that whether or not they had any real impact on the story. What's funny is that this one has a very sneaky impact on the story because it's really one of the only Secret Wars books that has characters that understand what happened. The collisions, the creation of Battle World, and what must have happened, and this all becomes a part of the story because of the cosmic level of powers that are involved with these characters, specifically Korvac and Starhawk.
The funny thing is, you guys had talked about this and said that I should probably read it. So this weekend, I read 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And then I read 4 when it came out, when I got it on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so I actually read this one, and I thought, oh my, like this is one of the key books, I think.
There you
like,
go.
Is it?
And yes, it's surprisingly so.
Yeah, if you had told me at the beginning that Korvac Saga was going to be one of the books you really probably needed to read, I would take, no, that's stupid. There's no way. We've got Bendis writing books, you know, right. We've got other, you know, big property books. Civil War is obviously going to have a lot more to do with it. Civil War will probably have nothing to do with it in the long run. And Korvac Saga, it looks like maybe one of those hidden keys that is used to unravel everything that Doom has put together.
Definitely.
Oh, and even though Dan Abnett being a Guardians writer, I don't think we mentioned Rocket Raccoon and Groot is a new series launching, announced today. Scotty Young writing, Felipe, whatever the last guy's last name that was doing the art on Rocket Raccoon, Andrade
mm-hmm.
is the artist.
Right. I mean, what I was just very quickly on the art on this Guardian, on this Korvac book, it's very, very uneven. I'm not a fan of this particular style.
That's why I stopped with issue 1.
It's very cartoony, and in some places it looked like almost like it was sketched.
Yes.
And they just inked his sketch instead of fully fleshing out the artwork.
Right. It's kind of hard to follow, but you have to, you know, even Dirt got it, that the story is actually has impact on the Secret Wars and the aftermath, the likely aftermath.
As opposed to Red Skull, which I thought you have Magneto and Red Skull together, and then you throw in Annihilus, obviously something big is going to happen in this book. When you have those giant characters, and this book ends, absolutely nothing of importance happens in this.
You know what's funny is that very quick. What did I read? What is that? Planet Hulk. I didn't even put on my list because I was so disappointed in how the book ended because nothing happened. There's nothing of consequence in this book. You know, it might be a character study of how different Steve Rogers is, might evolve in different realities, but at the end of the day, what was the point of this story? And I just found myself very annoyed at having slogged through most of this series. I'm glad I stopped picking up physical copies because it just lost me. And I get to the ending of this of the issue and the series, and I'm just, dumbfounded. It's like, why did I waste time reading this? This has no real impact and didn't really tell that good a story.
Be fair, Red Skull was at least fun to read.
Right.
And if you took it as a standalone what if pocket universe alternate storyline, it still is interesting.
Okay.
But being a Secret Wars tie-in, a Battle World book, it is of absolutely zero consequence to anything happening anywhere else.
Gotcha. All righty. So I read is that all for Secret Wars stuff that I read?
There was Siege in 2099.
Siege number 3 was it's not, I don't have much to say about it. It was okay. But the books I really want to talk about are not Secret Wars tie-ins, and I'm about to hit on two comics that are, one is not a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week because it's a constant top performer, and what I'm referring to is Ms. Marvel number 18. This is, I think this is the penultimate book in the series because the last page says to be concluded. So basically this is Kamala Khan dealing with the impending end of the world, as you know, the last days of Ms. Marvel as the last incursion is happening. And the last issue had Carol Danvers come in, and this is the second part of the team-up between the two characters. There's a lot of great interplay between the two characters. There's a cool ending to the story that involves the weird inhuman-powered boyfriend, and now we find out, spoiler alert, Kamala Khan is not the only member of her family that has inhuman genes in her. So we do find that out. There's a great, as I said earlier, there's a great interaction between the former Ms. Marvel, current Captain Marvel, and the current Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan. Just great, great character work by G. Willow Wilson. Alphona's art, as always, is a great draw. Really plays up the expressions on the characters' faces. The uniqueness of the characters' faces as well is always a welcome sight, in strong contrast to Chichetto's work that we were referencing in the Force Awakens book. And to top it all off, if there's a reveal at the end of the book that's very Spider-Man-esque.
I will say, when the book launched, that was one thing I thought about was, well, if she's an inhuman and it's in her blood, then shouldn't some other members of her family?
Right.
So that's cool to find out.
Exactly. And I love the fact that this book just keeps me, and I know other readers coming back wanting more about this character. It's really one of the best things that's come out of recent Marvel. So, I like this character and I like what they're doing with the story. I hope that, I know that they're coming back, that the creative team is coming back in all new, all different, but I'm glad that they're being given a pretty much, not free reign, but they're given a lot of leeway to create this this character and a great supporting cast. The other book I wanted to mention, which was a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week, we all know I'm a huge fan of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So this week, in the next chapter of the S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary, we have Quake S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary number 1. And the story is a retcon story that takes place before, I forget what volume of Avengers started in 2010, but it starts before issue number 20 of that particular run of Avengers. And there's a great, it's a great little story that involves Daisy Johnson's first, who we know to be Quake from the 616, but who we also know to be what's her face? Sky from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from the TV show. So what we have here is a telling of her first field assignment as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but with what they call the first team. And the first team in this case is actually a team of Avengers. And this is during a period when the Avengers were working very closely with S.H.I.E.L.D. and One of the best sequences in this book, and I won't dwell on this too much longer, is Daisy going through her her nerves because she's trying to figure out why she's been assigned to the first team. Why would she be a necessary part of basically a group, a squad of Avengers? Because the team already has a spy, Spider-Woman, a sniper, Hawkeye, a soldier. At this point, it was Captain Marvel, the Kree soldier.
You said it's a story in the past, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. It has a computer, the Vision, an A-hole, which is Iron Man, Tony Stark, a monster, the Red Hulk, and a field leader. A goddess, Storm. This is during that era when Storm was a member of the Avengers, and a leader, Captain America. And it was just a great little sequence. If you read this book, that's just a fun sequence of pages, and you know it's told from her point of view, obviously, and it's just a great point of view of a character who we know to be super powered, but to have this be her first real interaction with the field team. In this version of Marvel continuity, it's pretty, you know, seeing it told in story format is pretty cool. You know, just as a quick aside, we know that, you know, our first introduction to the character of Quake, Daisy Johnson, she was already like a super cool agent when Bendis introduced her in Secret War, the painted book with the limited series with, I forget the artist's
Gabriel
name.
Gabriel Delato.
Yeah, Delato, right. We already know her to be a very seasoned agent at that point, and seeing her as kind of a rookie, kind of in a retcon retold origin, is a little weird, you know, for someone who's read that first Secret War. But you know, seeing this issue told this way, it's great stuff. There's some humor in here, and there's definitely tie-ins to the TV show. There's definitely tie-ins to the TV show continuity, and you know, you see more characters from the TV show being tied into Marvel continuity as we go forward. So this is a well-done book, sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me.
All right, anything else?
No, I think that's it. That covers most of it. I'm glad I'm glad you read Korvac Saga, though, because I didn't want to have to hype or at least toot that particular book's horn because how surprisingly integral it is to the Secret War story.
All right, I've got three books here that I'll touch on real quick. Haunted Horror, this is number 18. This series, if you're not familiar with it, this is reprinting old horror comics from the 40s and 50s. We're now in the early 50s in the reprints here, and this is all great classic stuff. If you ever wondered about this time before the comics code and how they got there, I mean, this stuff, a lot of this stuff is pretty vile and pretty twisted, and it's hard to believe that this was on stands just for kids to pick up if they wanted to. The stuff that's in here is so bizarre and crazy, but I guess bizarre and crazy is the type of stuff I'm attracted to. So good stuff to pick up there. Let's see. We also had Star Trek Green Lantern, Spectrum Wars. What we're finding is that Ganthet, one of the Guardians, had this end-of-the-universe salvation in-run Hail Mary plan, where if the whole universe was going to be destroyed, he would take a set of rings and push himself into a parallel universe in order to save the basic structure of the core and the emotional spectrum. And the parallel universe, of course, they jumped into is the Star Trek universe, and that's how these two universes came to collide. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a lot of fun. Captain Kirk and Hal Jordan get to have their power plays back and forth with each other. I'm a captain. Well, I'm technically a captain too. And that type of stuff going back and forth. You've got basically all of the main Green Lantern villains were pulled through as well. So as like the Klingons get the Sinestro ring and decide that they can take over the galaxy, then Sinestro, of course, shows up, and he's willing to have people fight for him, but they have to obey him. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Klingons don't particularly like being told what to do, so you get the fun interactions with that
stuff. Kapla!
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably the only term that I know.
So anyway, it's still a fun series, and it's still one of those where, as odd as a setup as it is, it still absolutely makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the way everything plays out, and the characters who end up getting the rings, they all make sense. And I think only one character is new. Everyone else is a character that we've seen. And of course, the one character that I think is new may actually be an obscure character that showed up somewhere else in the past. I'm not sure. I haven't Googled it or anything, but so for the most part, you're seeing a lot of familiar faces from Green Lantern and from Star Trek history. Let's see. And then the last book I would talk about real quick is, of course, Walking Dead 146. Guess how many zombies are in this book?
All of
them. Zero.
Zero. Again.
I win.
So,
on this one. Dirt said, where are my zombies?
They're not in the zombie book.
I love it.
So, there you go. All right, what's who's got clicks?
I've been sitting here thinking about what mine would be.
Mine's easy. Ms. Marvel number 18. I enjoyed this book a whole heck of a lot. What was that alternate cover?
This is the manga variant. They have manga artists doing a bunch of variant covers.
It's okay. I like the idea of it. The execution, maybe not so much, but I like the idea.
But look at the face. The face on this book looks like the faces from the Journey to Shattered Empire or whatever that book is. So look at that face. That's exactly how that book.
It actually looked like the Avengers Confidential series movie on Netflix I started watching last week.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, because those are done by an anime studio. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Same thing. I'm going to go with Red Hood, Arsenal number 4.
Oh, my God.
I like this series. And, I mean, more than likely, there's probably a book I may like more once I read a couple more over the weekend. But as of right now, that one stuck with me.
Interesting.
I'm going to point out once again that Tony was right.
No.
Just because I can.
No. Ooh, where's the gong?
Boy, this is tough for me, because there were a lot of books that disappointed me.
A lot of stuff kind of fell uneven. Like, yeah. Stuff I was looking forward to, like the Star Wars stuff, I wasn't, you know, all that jazzed about.
Action Comics, Batman.
Of all the stuff I read, I think really Star Trek Green Lantern was what I enjoyed the most. I mean, because like I said, it hits all the right
beats. Just based off of your review, I thought that would be your pick.
Yeah, the characters are consistent. You know, everything makes sense. Even mixing the two lores together, it works. So, yeah, out of everything I read, this is probably the most satisfying.
Cool.
So there you go.
Cool. Alrighty. Want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's show live or via podcast. I want to thank Donnie Cates and Elliot Rahal. For joining us tonight. Follow them on their individual Twitter accounts. I forgot to give them a chance to shout out anything they wanted to shout out. But Donnie Cates is at Don Cates, C-A-T-E-S, and Elliot Rahal is at Elliot Rahal. Easy to find on Twitter. Elliot with just one T, Rahal, R-A-H-A-L.
There you go.
Again, check out the Paybacks number 1 next Wednesday.
Out next week. Make sure to add it to your pull list.
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98, at CBCron. Dirt is at ETN_Dirt and PopCultureNetwork.com. Agent 70 at Agent_70. And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And next week we have one more guest joining us. You'll find out next week.
Because we're balling.
And then we'll take a break from interviews, catch our breath.
Do shows that aren't 3 hours long.
Yes. This wasn't my grand plan when I said, I need to book more guests. Hey, they all have stuff coming out around the same time. But we'll make it do what it do.
Hey, it's content. Content, baby.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Good evening, friend. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom? What's on your evil mind? Oh,